than comparing that. They don't talk about that. The study is actually, the tool is actually expert opinion. It's not taken from valid, reliable sources. I thought that the focus on discipline specific was limiting.
And what about...
I might be able to just answer. I know a little bit about it since...
Oh, good.
Where I'm from, the University of Washington. It is actually done at admission and discharge by the psychiatrist, so it does have... I don't know. I didn't read the thing.
It's not described.
Yeah, so it might be helpful if Peter gets on the phone. But so there are... And it has been... They've published some articles on it, so there is some scientific stuff in there.
Hello?
Peter, are you on the phone?
No, this is Frank Ignacio. I was told to try to call around 1:30.
Okay. Thank you, Frank. We're just running a little bit late.
No, that's quite all right. Please, don't let me interrupt.
Okay. Now, what about, Luke, could you address whether you think this is in or out of scope as an outcome?
I think the way it's described, it's out of scope.
Yes, I agree. The way it's put forward is really just a measurement-based care tool, and there is no outcome measure that's addressed. It's just the use of the tool.
So shall we vote on whether it's in or out of scope? Is that the...
It might be
In theory, if the person gets on the line and says, "Oh, wait a minute, I do this pre-test, post-test. This is an outcome." Do we change? Does that change anything, or do we have to go by what is presented in their written form?
Well, if they clarify, then we could ask them to correct the form.
Correct.
So, why don't we then? He's not on the phone yet, right?
We're calling him now.
And if we can't get him in the next minute,
here,
we can go on to the next one.
We can
come back.
Since Frank is on, yeah,
right.
We could go to...
Okay. Why don't we go to the discussion of, Frank is on the... While Frank is on the phone, what we're going to do is go back to the three readmission measures that we discussed yesterday. And because Frank couldn't be on the phone yesterday and the person that represented his group couldn't hear us very well. So... Joel has agreed to give us provide an overview to Frank and the rest of the group on our discussion yesterday on the readmission measures.
And this was 3, 4, and 6.
Yes,
thank you, Joel.
That's 3, 4, and 6. And hi, I'm sorry that you weren't able to hear the discussion, but I'll just try and hit highlights here, and then you can ask. If you have any things you'd like us to clarify. And I'll talk about all three of these together to start because the submissions were identical except for the distinction between 30-day, 7-day, and 48-hour readmission rates. I think in general, the steering committee members felt that all of these measures were in scope for outcome measures, so all of them were candidates that we would consider, and there was consensus about that. In terms of the importance to report, here I will say the 30-day measure, two-thirds of the committee felt that the importance was completely demonstrated, and only one-third felt partially. But for the 7-day and the 48-hour, the committee was pretty unanimous that the importance to measure was partially met. The discussion around that, I think there was one comment from a reviewer that actually a couple of reviewers that the evidence provided in the submission really relied heavily on very old literature, but the expertise among committee members, I think gave us confidence that this is a direction the field is going in, that there are other measures, non-mental health measures, that do look at particularly 30-day readmission, and that there's substantial evidence from other fields within healthcare that this is important to measure. So I think in general that part was well established enough. In terms of scientific acceptability, there were concerns that this set of measures has been developed for use by a single healthcare system for internal determinations of the rate of service utilization, and that because it's constructed primarily for that purpose, that it may not generalize to the to use by other health systems, as well as that it may actually not generalize well in terms of the the fact that there is no real validity testing that was cited here was a concern, that what we're looking for is a measure that can be used beyond internal use for public reporting and needs to be interpretable by a community at large, not just internally. And so that partly relates to the scientific acceptability. It relates also to usability. And it was really on usability that I think the committee had most of its concerns, because the person who was on the phone with us yesterday said that these measures have been garnered from databases that are essentially administrative databases within the health system, not data from payers, that it would be very difficult then to get similar data beyond your own health system. If you wanted to look at readmissions from other facilities in the region, to actually be able to do that, and this is in terms of usability and feasibility both now, it might be very difficult if we aren't getting access to readmission rates that are reported by payers or in payers' databases. And I think that the concern then was that a measure that you've developed for use internally may not be easy to expand beyond your own organization. So that was, I think, the gist of the main concerns in terms of the limits of these. One other thing I would mention is that although 30 days has become sort of a standard for measuring readmission rates, I think in our discussion, and the person who was on the phone from WPIC did say that, of course, proximity in time to the readmission to the discharge makes it easier to attribute readmission to something that happened during the index hospital stay. So 48 hours would look like readmissions at 48 hours would be the ones most easy to attribute to in-hospital events. That said, there was some concern that we really don't have a lot of evidence to guide us in knowing whether it makes sense to measure at all three time intervals or only at 30 days, because that's sort of an emerging industry standard, or whether 48 hours has the white heat of relevance and we ought to focus on that. So those were the main points that I can recall from yesterday's discussion. And I would stop there and ask if you have let me ask other committee members if there were other points that they felt were important to highlight from that discussion yesterday.
Just to highlight one point here, the measure as submitted seemed to be tremendous within a given system, but what I heard the committee looking for was to look at the data that might be more broadly collected from, say, a payer, or that would be inclusive admissions outside of a given system. And that was a critical omission in trying to move this from a QI or performance improvement measure within a system to an accountability measure.
Yeah, I would add there was some more detailed discussion about this issue of patients discharged from one hospital system and then being readmitted but to another hospital system where those might not be detected. And conversely, where there are transfers from another hospital system back into the hospital system where the index hospitalization occurred, which creates some challenges. But the question is whether those could all be captured in a single region. And the committee felt that that was easier to do, more feasible to do, when you had payer database rather than an administrative database from a single system.
Two comments. First of all, the title's wrong. It should be 30-day readmissions, not remissions.
Oh, yeah. Typo.
That would be great if we had one like that.
Yeah. At the risk of my memory being gone for this, didn't we discuss something about how we maybe didn't need this specifically in mental health, that this was a broader issue of a discussion about readmissions as a basic NQF measure that we wanted maybe to defer to a non-specific readmission measure because of the importance of breaking down this barrier between psych-to-psych readmissions?
I don't think you discuss it, but it's a good idea.
No, there was some discussion about that, and breaking down that barrier between readmission, psych to medicine, medicine to psych to psych, you know, and that there was nothing specific about psychiatry. And in fact, by keeping it limited within behavioral health, we were really creating a conceptual barrier to that we don't want to create.
I recall the conversation we were having was in regard to the readmissions being counted only if they were for psychiatric admissions versus any admission.
And that the next step, therefore, was that this was really a much more general measure of hospital care.
Yeah, the example there being a person discharged after inpatient treatment for depression who gets readmitted the following month, within the following month, for an exacerbation of their diabetes or
trauma service.
Yeah.
The other issue was around risk adjustment. And particularly as we're getting into an issue of accountability measurement, that some form of risk adjustment might be very important.
Frank, did you want to comment on this in response to this discussion?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was how it was stated in your submission. That I think the let me just I can bring this up pretty quickly. The it was that the validity was not addressed with respect to quality of care or time interval because this measure was regarded as only a rate of service utilization. And again, that was stated a couple places in each of the measure submissions. So we took that to mean that you use it internally that way and you know how to interpret that rate of service utilization. The concern for using this as a quality measure more broadly that's publicly reported and used for QI purposes more widely is that other entities might have trouble interpreting these numbers generated this way, that works for you and you have your monthly meetings to make sense of these data, but that might not be a universal experience. And that is actually one of the criteria for usability. But that was how we were just responding to the way – I'm sorry, we were just responding the way it was written in the submission. It wasn't stated quite that way in the submission, and I think with the next submission, that kind of explanation would be particularly important. The other thing is we actually, in our phone discussion, although it was a tough connection yesterday, we got the impression that you didn't have access to any payer data, and that also is an unfortunate miscommunication. Yeah, we imagined it might be that way. That's why we were confused about the message we got yesterday.
Yeah, I think the bottom line that I heard our committee talk about is that as a performance improvement, an internal system measure, this is great, and that the direction this could go to be useful as an accountability measure where there was care to make sure that all readmissions were captured and that there was some risk adjustment so there could be meaningful comparisons among systems, across systems, would be a logical next step. And I think people were very enthusiastic about seeing that in a resubmission.
That's great. Only one last question I have, with your indulgence. We had used a couple of rates at risk adjustment factors. Did the committee generate, I had to miss yesterday, did the committee generate any thoughts, or would you have any suggestions about what, as a group nationally, you would see as essentially important risk adjustment variables?
Yeah, well, we did acknowledge that the ones that you said you sometimes apply are age, gender, zip code, race, and diagnosis. There was some mention about severity of illness, and I know in the submission it did discuss the fact that readmission is not necessarily correlated with severity of symptoms. We appreciate that as well. But in terms of using this more widely, there was concern that there be an approach to risk adjustment that might include other aspects of the patient's the case mix in the system.
Okay, that's great. Thanks.
I had two questions and a possible motion. One question is, and this applies, I guess, as a sort of to an NQF policy. If Frank had, instead of his group, had proposed this being from the point of view of a payer, and that was the way in which this submission came in, that a payer having access to information about the all of their enrollees, irrespective of site of service delivery, that they would be able to look at readmissions. Would that have made a difference? Because I mean, you could have proposed that as a measure, and it would have, and it would be essentially the same mechanics, and it wouldn't have been susceptible to some of the criticisms.
Interesting point.
I think This is Frank. This is Reva from NQF. I think there are still a couple of things, and that is the lack of information around the validity and the lack of risk adjustment. So that those are both independent of data source. So you may have addressed one issue, but perhaps not everything that was problematic for you. It would depend on how you could support that measure respecified from a different data source in terms of all of the rest of the subcriteria.
What's the issue about validity?
Well, the fact is they said that validity wasn't addressed or didn't need to be addressed, and so there really was nothing.
I'm trying to figure out what would be the analysis that would support validity.
Well, I mean, right now, or with even a measure that was vetted at a insurer level, for example, one would want to know independently, was there substantial readmissions that weren't counted, that were leaked out into other parts of the system, is just one example. I mean, there are all sorts of reasons why I could imagine that there'd be substantial potential readmissions, depending on the data set available, that might not.
I mean, you say that about almost any measure that you could.
But this is more important, I think. I understand.
I'm trying to understand, like, from the perspective of a measure developer, that one tweak, you know, in terms of what they proposed and how they looked at it, would have.
Well,
you're making.
You're right.
That was my first question. Yeah. The second question I had was, what is happening with regard to readmissions at NQF more broadly?
As we talked about yesterday, NQF has recently and continues to look at condition-specific 30-day all-cause readmission rates. We've already endorsed measures for AMI, heart failure, pneumonia. And I think in this outcomes project, on the main steering committee is looking at a couple of other procedure type measures. Something that's growing.
So do you have a template for how those are done? Are they done consistently in the same way, utilizing the same risk adjustment methodologies
and
the same validity assessments?
As it turns out, they all are coming from the same measure developer, so simply because of that fact, they are done in the same way, but it isn't driven by NQF per se. It's the fact that the folks who are doing that work.
Who's that?
It's Yale University under contract with CMS.
So is that the definition that's used for the 30-day readmission?
You got it.
CMS Compare?
Yep.
So perhaps our committee could.
So that leads to my third part, which is a motion that NQF, sort of the same thing we did for adverse events, that NQF incorporate within whatever efforts they're doing with regard to readmission as a measure to investigate the possibility of encouraging condition-specific readmission measures to be aligned, to be developed and aligned with the other readmission measures in mental health.
Do you mean the converse?
I mean in mental health to be, I just put the phrase in the wrong place.
I was trying to follow.
Yeah.
Well, I think that in just this theme of trying to keep things aligned, harmonized degree possible, to keep the field, to minimize the chaos, that certainly we would recommend, one of the recommendations you can make, is for those folks within the mental behavioral health field who want to look at 30-day readmissions, you know, take a look at some of the other types of readmissions and how they're done, because they use payer data, and they are extensively risk-adjusted. So, I mean,
so,
there
so
are
I
some
would,
characteristics.
So I would officially make that motion that we do that.
We can do that as a recommendation.
And just there wasn't any discussion yesterday or recommendation specifically that there needed to be tests of construct validity or anything like that. I think it was more the concern about the interpretability of data coming from a system
that
didn't really address case mix and the crossover between systems and readmissions.
I think that's
different than validity testing, certainly.
Yeah. I made that motion, hopefully.
Bob?
Well, if you want to vote on the motion first, that would be fine. But I have a question for Frank.
actually. And if I'm out of order, the chair will tell me. But the but Frank, is there you made the speculation that the relationship between something that took place on the inpatient unit and readmission would be much more compelling for a 48-hour readmission than for a 30-day readmission. And that certainly makes sense, but is that something that you could say from your own internal investigations of these events that, in fact, that when you look at 48-hour readmissions, that 75% of the time you find that there was the ball was dropped on the inpatient unit sometime, someplace along the way, but at 30 days, you know, you rarely find that?
We've seen trends. I would be misleading you if I said that at this point I could lay out a very nice graph that would show a clean distinction along those lines. So some of this has been sort of our consensus about the way we do work here. We could certainly re-examine our own data with that lens again to kind of make that distinction. But I'd be misleading you if I told you there was a clean study we could publish right now.
Okay. Thank you.
I think the other thing, if you're contemplating a resubmission at some point, while I think the committee recognizes generally that there is variability among facilities in readmission rates, and that probably is a good quality indicator, within your own system, if you have that kind of data, or if there are data you can cite from other studies, just to support that, it's a process issue here in terms of being able to vet these measures.
No, it's a good point, Bob.
Okay, so we are going back to Harold's motion that's on the table that everybody remembers, I'm sure. His recommendation. Do we have any further amendments or comments about that? Or are we ready to vote? Okay. All in favor of the group supporting the recommendation that that Harold recommended? Raise your hand. Any opposed or abstain? Okay. So. That was unanimous, Frank, since you can't see us with our hands raised. And so I would like to congratulate you on submitting a measure that has resulted in a recommendation to NQF that they look at 30-day readmission rates as...
I would say 30-day, I say just
readmission rates
in a parallel way.
So harmonization.
Right. But specifically for... behavioral health.
Right.
Yes.
So thank you very much for all your work in submitting this measure.
So let's see, are we back to 14?
Yes, we're back to 14. So now we are back to 14. Do we have the measure developer on the phone, Peter?
Yes, I am here, and I can probably be here for about another 15 minutes or so, because I just heard about this today and I have to go into the university.
Okay.
So
well,
I do have the other individual, Dr. Yuta Yosh, who kind of manages most of our quality assurance and really prepared much of this application and is even more familiar than I with some of the more technical and analytical aspects of the measure.
Okay, so you're both on the phone?
Yes, we are.
Okay, so Ian, will you take us through the summary of number 14?
I think
Oh, yeah, we already did this.
Some questions about...
That's right. We did so number 14 is...
This is the psychiatric rated assessment of psychiatric inpatients' clinical status.
Psychiatrist rated assessment of patients' clinical status, something like that.
So I think the one question, Peter, this is Jeff Sussman, was this really an outcome measure or not? The way it was presented within the submission, those of us who had a chance to review this more in depth, wasn't sure that it was interpretable as an outcome measure for accountability purposes we could see perhaps how it would be used within the process of care for quality improvement, performance improvement, but the specification of the measure didn't allow me to understand how this would be an outcome measure that could be compared across institutions, across settings, and so forth.
Yeah, so I think that's a very good measure. Obviously, most of our interest here has been in developing measures that could use for dual purposes, and you're correct that...
We're going to vote on scope or in scope.
...measure was used more for better understanding case mix, relationship of different conditions and subconditions and how they impacted level of care and program development. But we also do use the measure and repeat the measure and obtain, you know, changes in these clinical metrics over time. And I think it's a challenge in that those that kind of look struggled with was developing a measure that would apply to the very heterogeneous nature of psychiatric inpatients. So that's probably even been a bit more of a challenge from the outcome dimension, but we do repeat this measure and we use it to understand, for example, the efficiency of length of stay, what's the degree of improvement that people have had, and how that... how efficient their improvement has been over the number of days they've been in the hospital.
Thank you very much for that summary. We're talking a bit among ourselves
about making sure that we're all on the same page.
We've gone through so many measures, we're just sort of orienting ourselves back to, okay, which measure was this? And I think that was it Luke and Sheila that talked most about this measure. And could you just for even this group, give us a little couple, few sentence recap about this, what you thought about this. We talked mostly about how it was in or out of scope.
What I talked about before was that the tool, and we didn't know prior to this that the tool is used on admission and discharge. But the focus on discipline-specific measure is limiting. How did you develop the tool?
How did I develop the tool?
Right.
Well, I actually developed the tool when I came here to run the psychiatry program, actually in the early 90s, and we thought that measurement-based care would be crucial in us having the most state-of-the-art psychiatric inpatient program, and I went around the country and talked to a whole bunch of different people, and I was, a little bit deflated to learn that there were many individual measures that would measure different conditions, and it seemed to me totally unworkable or unwieldy to have a large, diverse set of measures for individual conditions, particularly because individuals that are hospitalized psychiatrically have more than one condition. So that was totally not workable, and I therefore attempted to work to develop something that would be more generically usable across a heterogeneous group of individuals that would tap into the major behavioral health domains that would affect these individuals and be relevant for both program planning, level of care, and treatment. And then also tried to make sure that we would have concrete behaviorally relevant anchor points so that these could be used by clinicians that were practicing on the units and would not require the same kind of rating scale training that more traditional research instruments that are used in research studies would have. And so we ultimately felt that a BPRS-like measure would be effective. But that had the wrong anchor points, and then became aware that there was an adaptation of that by someone from the National Institute of Mental Health, Dr. Bigelow, years ago, who I actually knew when I was there but didn't know that he'd had this. And then we tried to adapt this to our particular setting and do some reliability and validity testing on it, and also create some additional measures that were not particularly part of this scale, you know, but obviously would need to be part of any scale that would be used in an inpatient psychiatric facility. And I think I'd sent to you a number of the papers that were published that outlined the development of this particular scale, but that's sort of anecdotally how it was done.
Is the tool being used anywhere else, or is it pretty much just your unit?
Well, it's interesting. It's used across the entire program. We actually have three units here in Harborview. We have had some discussions with the state hospital here about whether they might want to adapt it. But in truth, I've not been engaged in much of a publicity of the measure to try to spread the word, as it were. So you're right. I mean, it's still only locally used, which obviously is a limitation.
So, you know, to use an analogy, in a previous discussion, we were talking about the PHQ and demonstrating remission. So it wasn't just a well-validated measure or instrument. It was using that in a way to get at an outcome. And what I see, and I'm talking just as one member of this committee, what I see the gap here is that it hasn't gone the next step to specify a measurement, quality measure. We've got a validated tool, but we don't have a validated quality measure that's been developed from that tool. Well, I guess what I see on the submission is not a well-explicated numerator and denominator that would link with this use of the tool and could be then used risk-adjusted across each of different populations. It seems to me what has been submitted has concentrated and done a very good job of demonstrating the validity of the tool, but not necessarily the next step of the validity of the measure. So, for example, a measurement, quality measure might specify the use of this tool upon admission and discharge among some population of patients and demonstrate that there is validity, reliability, and that there's some appropriate case adjustment. And then that potentially would be a very valuable measure.
record system here, and we're even looking and in the process of analyzing to simplify the number of items so that it could be more repetitively administered in a more easy way by our clinicians. But that is for the future.
So that sounds as though you have a great tool, and that potentially in the future you might consider submitting some measurements of outcome to this committee that would be garnered from the use of this tool, if you would have a way to collect patient outcomes for the future.
Right, and again, I just have to keep assessing, because and I don't mean to be a little bit dull about understanding this, but we do use this tool to measure the outcome of patients and the difference in how they were doing on admission and when they were discharged. So to me, that does seem to be an outcome of sorts, though I do understand your point that has not been standardized as a metric that could be easily interpretable
right.
across other populations.
I think that the issue is that that was what you describe is not evident from what you submitted in writing. What you submitted in writing is more about the tool and not the outcomes that you've derived from the tool. So we would encourage you to, it sounds as though you are, might even be able to do that and potentially at a different time resubmit an outcome measure using this tool, but not to submit the tool itself, but a set of outcome measures or even one outcome measure that you could suggest be a valid, reliable measurement utilizing this tool.
Yes, well, we have that data already. We could formulate the answer to that and provide information on a future submission.
Okay. And that would probably take a while for you to do?
Just because we're doing a lot of different things. We have the data. It's not like we need to collect it. We have it. And it's computerized.
Next time. Okay, so I'm sure that NQF is going to keep you on their list. We will ask them to for any future requests for these kind of outcome measures and encourage you to submit your data. And there are people at NQF that can work with you prior to submission to make sure that the submission is in the direction of that they're looking for.
So would we be able to get something electronically that would just tell us the outcome of your deliberations and what your suggestions and guidance are so that we could pursue this?
Yes.
Yes, that's part of the process.
Okay. Great.
Thank you very much for your interest in and getting on the phone today to discuss this with us.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Otoscope, right.
Otoscope.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
Passionate about what they've done, and I think we have to acknowledge that.
But
we have to come back to, okay, is this, is it or isn't it?
Right. Right. Okay,
Carol? Can I? It just does strike me, hearing how perplexed he sounded in the conversation and thinking about the conversation we had earlier today, this distinction between measuring outcomes at the client level, which I think this in many ways was analogous to the efforts in the Milestones of Recovery scale, that folks are really doing very, very creative work to take a holistic and to take a really different look at how to measure client outcomes at that level. The distinction between that kind of outcome measurement and the accountability-oriented outcome measurement that kind of clearly emerged from our discussions as the task for this group, I would think that it would be really valuable to go back and look at the call for measures and see if that distinction was clearly communicated to folks who submitted it, and particularly for those who were really strong on the thing that we weren't looking for, to be able to communicate in some way that really acknowledges the groundbreaking work that they're doing, and that just was not exactly what we were looking for.
I'm thinking also that maybe another step in the process might help. Like with a lot of things like this, you have, like, grants are often like this, where you submit, you say, well, I'm going to be an intended grant submitter. And they have that initial, you know, yes, I'd like to intend to submit. The reason they do that is so that you not only get the mail, but you're invited to a bidders conference where you get on the phone, you go from, you know, like the ABCs, basics of what we're looking for, ask questions, because a lot of people were very confused by what we were looking for. And I'm, you know, a lot of times that kind of interaction might be worthwhile. And I know that Ian did reach out to people, but some of them were still confused. I don't know if they didn't reach you or...
Well, I think we have to remind ourselves of how long it took us to agree and understand, because we did. I didn't when I first walked in November. Right. So it took us...
And I think the key issue here is that measurement doesn't equal measures. And the fact that there's a wonderful tool that measures things in a valid, reliable way is wonderful. I mean, that really is the evidence basis on which then a quality measure could be built. But it's that second step that I think Peter just doesn't quite connect up with right now.
But we're not. That means we're not effectively communicating it.
Well, I mean, you know, I think it's everybody's responsibility to be part of that conversation.
Yeah. I think there's a learning curve going on because we're seeing it in the other parts of the project as well, because there are a lot of these tools are known sort of in the general realm of patient-reported outcomes. And so when you use that term outcomes, you know, they're focusing in on it. And I think the outcomes has been the part that sort of has ended up in the largest caps and the biggest bold. And the, you know, for accountability and public reporting of performance, you know, sort of NQF's reason for existence, you know, may have been overshadowed by the outcomes in big bold. So, you know, you're right. It's actually a communications thing. And also in the realm of mental health, we were, thanks to you all, reaching out to people who probably were not as familiar with the work we do, whereas in the more mainstream, for instance, you were talking about your bidders conference. We actually have had major developers conferences invite 100 folks to come in and tell them the story, how to do it, what the, you know. Yeah. And I think the last one was last September. So, I mean, you know, we don't do it every week. But you're absolutely right. It's an ongoing effort, and recruiting, you know, new people who haven't participated before. There is a learning curve. All of your comments and observations are absolutely on target, and it's an ongoing effort on our part to you know, bring people up to speed in exactly what we're doing and what the focus is.
So in the future, the people who submitted measures here, will they be invited to one of those conferences?
We will put them on the list, and they will, you know.
Yeah, right. They come or not as close.
Right. I mean, that's how we create the list of invitees, is anybody who somehow connects with us in some way, shape, or form. So submitting one is a real good place to start.
I wonder if an even more targeted approach, and it's right along the same lines, is to say to people like Peter, you know, you got this all over. You got such a wonderful instrument here. We'd really like to work with you. Bring your stuff for, let's call it, a measurement-to-measures conference or something along that line that gets a little bit more specific. It says, okay, bring us your stuff. Let's work on real-world problems with real-world measurement and tried to use that as a case example, if you will. Again, it's a wild thought. I know there are a lot of logistical challenges to do something like that, well, which fortunately I don't have to worry about.
Actually, I think one of the benefits of NQF membership is being able to hook up with other members who do this,
yeah.
And that's one of the avenues that is quite potential without us being necessarily, you know, right the yeah. you know, right yeah. in the nexus of it all.
And I just wanted to point one thing out. While Rita's not an NQF staff member, she actually did bring to my attention that there is a major developers conference or call on April 19th. Mm. So there are engagements or processes for that.
Rita's been doing this for over a
decade. Yeah, Rita's been doing it longer than I have, and that's pretty long.
There is a catch-22, though, because, and I think Harold made a comment before that kind of rung true, that a lot of people who are well-poised to be measure developers, that's not their title in their day job, and they don't even think conceptually about it because they haven't taken measures 101. Measurement 101, maybe, tool development 101, but measures 101 is about putting it all
yep.
together. And actually, the fact that you had to do the concept development for this group here says something about this emerging field. It's mm-hmm. it's an evolving field. And I think that
yeah.
I can think of lots of colleagues who do work that's critically related to the stuff we're talking about, but they've never put together a measure. They don't really know all the principles and the basic criteria. But when you put out an April 19th call for, you know, get on the phone and join in on this teleconference, if they haven't already self-identified as someone who perhaps could be working in this field or could contribute to this, then they're not going to join the call. So the catch-22 is to figure out how to more broadly educate. I think we've identified three sort of target audiences: people who work in industry and do proprietary stuff, people who work in academics, and you know there are the clinical researchers and the health services researchers. And you know, I think that getting at those folks is just with some basic concept building. It's more than communication. It's they've got to get the concepts in their head, and the second element is incentives. We're not paying them to do it. They get paid in their day job for something, and they have to be able to perceive that there's some incentive to submit, because it does take work.
I mean, recently there was the NIMH implementation conference that I attended. That'd be a great audience to have a workshop or two around turning measurement into measures. It's the right audience in that this is about implementation science, and there really is an evolving science here. So I think thinking about how to connect at least with the research community that might be interested and engaged here is probably something that at least you could explore. I recognize there's only so many places and so many things you all can do.
You know, one that brings to mind one interesting target group, which is program officers at the NIH and even at the foundations. One of the things, when they put money into research, they want their dollars well invested. And what that means is, in part, is they want their investigators to have a product at the end that can be disseminated widely and translated into clinical care and improvements in care. And so the funders that's where follow the dollars. They're basically providing the salary support for the people who are doing this work. And if those people then understand that my boss, who's my program officer, expects me to do the dissemination step after I get my results and I publish them and all that, I'm not done. Then I need to think about the next step. How can we move this into the field at large? And I think the program officers, when they write their program